Again for loading us down and queuing us up. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details are at offbeatoregon.com. Check it out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of Oregon's Cattleman-Sheepman War. This story was first published on September 19th, 2010, under the headline, Oregon's Cattleman-Sheepman War had more than 10,000 woolly casualties. Here we go. When you hear the term range war, chances are you think of the movie Shane with Alan Ladd. Or maybe you're a pulp westerns fan and your mind goes straight to the 1880s Pleasant Valley Massacre in Arizona, the one Zane Grey wrote about in To the Last Man. It isn't widely known, but Oregon had its own range war in Central Oregon. Simmered for decades and finally boiled over into violence in the first few years of the 1900s. But if Gray had written its story, he probably would have called it To the Last Sheep. The rangeland of central and eastern Oregon was, at the time, unregulated and public, and for many years the big cattle outfits had let their animals run on it. Of course, it wasn't their land, and they had no real incentive to take care of it, and they didn't. But that was mostly okay, because cattle are picky eaters. They might chew the regular grass down to the roots, but they'd leave various other weeds behind to at least hold most of the soil in place. By the 1890s, though, there were more than 100,000 woolly white interlopers competing with the cattle for prime grazing lands. And the sheep don't mind eating a weed. So when the sheepman let his flock overgraze a field, the result was a more extreme form of damage. Sheepmen were also harder to keep tabs on. They lived out of specially built wagons, the predecessor to the modern camp trailer, with stove, kitchen, sleeping berth, pulled from grazing site to grazing site by a horse or two. They tended their flocks on foot. Often the way a cattleman would figure out where they were was he'd drive his herd for days to a high meadow only to find that a flock of sheep had already taken it down to dirt and rocks. It wasn't the kind of situation that usually ends well. In this case, it ended in the formation of something called the IZ Sheep Shooters in Grant County in the mid-1890s. This enterprising group of cattlemen had a fairly simple business model. Sneak up on a sheep camp, capture the sheepmen, tie them to a tree, and slaughter the entire flock with knife, gun, or club right on the spot. Participants were sworn to secrecy and agreed that although murder was not their goal, if a sheepman were killed during an operation, he would be buried on the spot and nothing said. After these fellows got a few successful operations under their belts, at least one similar operation sprang up in neighboring Crook County. The cattlemen's operations really got going in the early 1900s, with single operation kills of 2,400 sheep at Benjamin Lake in 1903, 3,000 at a corral at Silver Lake, and later 2,300 in the same place in 1904, and 1,000 in the Ochoco Mountains in 1905. Of course, there were many smaller operations involving flocks of just a few hundred or a few dozen. The sheepmen, fortunately, did not respond in kind, probably because their solitary sheep herders and their big, highly visible camp wagons were so much more vulnerable than the cowboys were. Cowboys slept in bunkhouses or in discreet, hidden camps under the stars and were, thanks to their horses, capable of scouting much larger areas. Had the sheep herders responded to the invitation to escalate the violence, they would probably not have fared well. Instead, they complained to authorities, asking county officials to do something about it. Sheep shooters responded by urging their county authorities to mind their own business and not get involved, advice that the local governments for the most part took. Sheepmen also tried to arrange meetings with cattlemen to work out matters amicably, but the cattlemen, probably sensing that they had the upper hand, weren't interested. A $1,500 reward was offered for information leading to the arrest of the sheep shooters, but no one needed the money badly enough to turn rat for it. Everyone knew it was a matter of time before something happened and someone died. And this may have happened. The sheep shooters certainly wouldn't have announced it if it had. Indeed, there was one death, that of merchant Creed Kahn in Silver Lake, officially ruled a suicide but considered so deeply suspicious that the Daily Oregonian newspaper frankly called it a murder. In her book, The Grassy Knoll Murder, Christmas Valley historian Melanie Tupper argues convincingly that the Kahn murder was unrelated to the sheep shooters, but that the killer took advantage of the simmering range war to try to shift the blame. She's probably right. But Oregon's range war never went further than that, probably because the problem was solved by Uncle Sam. In a move surely at least partly inspired by the violence and the damage to land that the old system encouraged and rewarded, the federal government, which, remember, was the actual owner of most of the land being fought over, took action in 1906. It ordered the rangeland supervisor to divide the public land into grazing allotments and give them exclusively to one operator apiece for a fee. With the public rangeland suddenly off-limits to all but one cattle or sheep operation, there was no longer anything to fight over, and if one operator was grazing on another's allotment, it was clear to all who was in the wrong. So Central Oregon's range war just faded away. But by the time it did, more than 10,000 sheep had been killed, and at least one sheep herder wounded by a stray bullet. Not a single sheep shooter was ever publicly identified. Well, that's it for today's Offbeat Oregon History Podcast episode. What you've been listening to is an archive column from the newspaper service. If you'd like to hear more, there is a couple dozen more of these podcasts on iTunes. Search the iTunes store for Oregon History or go to offbeatoregon.com/iTunes and it'll take you right to it. There are also hundreds of columns on the website, going back to 2008, most of them with pictures. Our theme music is a track by the Atlas String Band called Old Man's Waltz, written by Carmen Ficarra. All these columns are covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Details are at offbeatoregon.com/cc. Coming to Corvallis? Drop me a line. Let's grab a cup of coffee. I love geeking out with fellow history buffs. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. And finally, my book about the naughty bits of 1890s Portland just came out. If you like these podcasts, chances are pretty good you'll like it. It's titled Wicked Portland, from the History Press. Check it out. You can read the lost chapter, the chapter I had to cut out of the book for space reasons, at wickedportland.com, and if you like what you see, a search for Wicked Portland brings it right up on Amazon, and they've got one of those look inside kind of things, so you can check out some of the text in it, too. That's it for today. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.